Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bac with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Fellowship and love.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Trent Horn in studio with us for the second hour as well. Trent is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, a speaker who goes all around the world speaking in defense of life and in defense of the teachings of the Catholic Church, and also a prolific author. As a matter of fact, prolific is pretty much a word that was invented to be able to describe Trent. His latest book, of course, is Counterfeit Christs. At least I think it's the latest book. While we're on the break, did you write another book?
I'm writing another book.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm writing a book with an economist, Catherine Pakalik, and the book is called Why Catholics Can't Be Socialists. So get ready for a fun spring when it comes out next year.
That should make Thanksgiving fun. Well, I'll be discussing that. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. All right. Well, you can't be socialist. Why Catholics can't be socialists.
That's right.
All right. All right. You want to give us a clue? I'm going to... No, because no, save it. Don't.
Because the church has consistently taught that since modern socialism was invented.
Oh.
It's addressed in 8 major papal encyclicals.
But what about really good socialism where everybody gets everything free? Can't we have that?
You can't because there's no such thing as a free lunch. You have to pay for something. And what the popes and the church has routinely condemned is an economic system that deprives people of their natural rights and forces them into production for the good of the state as a whole. Pope Pius XI said, frankly, no Catholic can be a true socialist and good Christian at the same time. If you want more, the book will be out hopefully early next year.
888-318-7884 is our number. If you're a pro-choice person, this hour is for you. As a matter of fact, we would be delighted to take your call. We are pro-life people, or anti-abortion, if you want to use that word. I don't have a preference myself. Or if you have some other name you'd like to call us, that's fine. I just want to be clear with you that that is our position, and we would like to discuss your position with you if you are a pro-choice person. 888-318-7884. We start this hour with an anonymous caller in Portland, Oregon, listening on Mater Dei Radio. Anonymous, we got you there with us?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
We can, yes. Why are you pro-choice?
Well, I'll say that in just a sec. I just want to share that I'm very grateful to you guys for continually having these conversations with charity and courage, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So the reason I'm pro-choice, so I would say the primary reason is because I'm a atheist agnostic, and I think that generally speaking that embryos and developing fetuses are human beings, mm-hmm. And that abortion is a kind of murder, mm-hmm. but that the kind of murder it is of a human being that hasn't yet developed a mind and also only has a few relational associations. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's a human being whose primary association is with the mother, and that and hasn't developed the mind. I think a lot of atheists would agree that that consciousness and personhood sort of develops after the first trimester. And so that sort of murder of the child doesn't have it has a specific case.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree with you that consciousness does not exist in the first trimester of development, whatever is meant by that. But not on the grounds of personhood. So your claim is that the unborn child is a human being, but it's murder, but because this human being is not conscious and has very few relationships or attachments among other people, it shouldn't be illegal to kill this human being.
Yes, and specifically because, I think it's generally speaking, not a good thing, but for the well-being and the flourishing of the mother, who in some circumstances, carrying out the child will radically change her life.
All right. Well, it sounds like, though, your position logically entails infanticide, because an infant has very minimal levels of consciousness, but a rat has more consciousness than a newborn infant, and most people don't think it's morally wrong to kill rats, for example. A newborn infant has very few biological attachments. If an infant is euthanized in their sleep, there's not much they don't have cognitive attachments to things, much like a fetus. So does your position lead to infanticide?
I can see how you would think that. I think that in any kind of child over or beyond the first 3 months of prenatal development has a kind of a consciousness, a presence of mind. And so in that sense, and again, this is not a firm, like I would go out and try to argue for these laws. I'm just trying to explain where I'm coming from with the pro-choice perspective.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, but I'm trying to make sure that it's consistent. So do you think that moral rights belong to beings in virtue of their level of consciousness?
Moral rights belong to beings in virtue of their level of consciousness. I think it's in this case, it's a very specific and tailored case where the consciousness has not yet developed, and also there are few associations. So if you had someone, say, in a coma, right, they have a family, and I think creating a law with broad strokes, it doesn't make sense, where I think abortion has sort of settled to the top of the debate because there are a lot of situations where people disregard the vitality of the being. Yeah.
Well, Anonymous, what I'm trying to do is, in order to figure out what we do in particular cases, we have to figure out what our broader principles are, right?
Right.
Okay. So it sounds like for you, moral rights attach to a being in virtue of the kind of consciousness they have. If they don't have consciousness, then they can't have moral rights.
Right. Sure.
Okay. But if they do have consciousness, then they do have rights. To me, that leads to two problems. One problem I alluded to before, there are non-human animals that have more consciousness than some humans. So your view would make it seem to be that we have to treat newborn infants, rats, pigeons, pigs, dogs, cats, as all being morally equivalent, because they have the same level of consciousness. In fact, the animals have more than the infant in those cases, which I think most people would consider to be counterintuitive, which I think counts against that.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. I can see why people would find that counterintuitive. I find that generally consistent, though, as I believe in animal rights as well.
Do you think a rat has the same rights as a newborn infant?
I don't think they do, but I think potentially they should if we develop in that direction as a society.
So, for example, if rats are in a barn, you couldn't gas them to kill them, much like you couldn't gas a squatter in a barn.
Right. I can see how that would get problematic pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, it's just the logical end of what you're saying.
And I agree with you on that. I think for abortion, it has to be very specific, though.
Right. But here's the other. And
it's
then
such a specific human situation. But I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. So to me, it becomes problematic then if that's the moral principle we adopt. The second point that's problematic. So that's a problem, the first one, of including non-human animals and giving them rights when I think most people agree they don't have rights. We should be kind to animals. We shouldn't torture them for no reason, but I disagree that they have rights. The second point would be this, that I do believe that it excludes certain born humans. So, for example, like in a hospital, if you get an unconscious person who has no friends or family, they could be homeless, they could be a hermit, and you come across this individual and they're not conscious. They're like if they're in a reversible coma, let's say, it'd seem like under your position, right, they wouldn't have rights then.
Well, under my position, they still would, because in my position, it's very difficult to really clearly show that an individual, an adult or a born individual, doesn't have those associations. But with a pre-born child, I think it's pretty clear you can say, generally speaking, they don't have those relationships.
And I guess then here's my second question. Why do our relationships with other people grant us moral status? That makes it sound like our right to life is dependent on other people validating us.
I do think in the case of, for example, individuals in comas, that there's something about the history of who somebody is that when people are developing laws, they want to take into consideration those possibilities. They don't want to create a law that governs individuals who may have those associations. But I see, I'm not answering your question.
Yeah.
What is it about the relationships and the associations that matter?
Right, because it sounds
I would just say, I don't know if I know the answer to that question. It seems to me that for a lot of people, that's where they would go.
Right, because to me, it's not just associations. I would assume you're talking about positive associations, because what if we have a person who has many associations, but they all want him or her dead?
Right.
Like, let's say there's someone who stands in line for an inheritance.
Okay. Well, in that case, it would still be... that's a specific case of someone who is born and they have these negative associations, but you wouldn't want to regulate that because, I mean, if you made a rule for if someone has no associations, for example, negative associations, I would still call associations. I wouldn't say that having negative associations would indicate that someone doesn't.
But
have
here's
that
my thing. Right. Let's back up and we'll get a little bit higher here. I did think it was interesting. You said you weren't sure why having relations at all, because to me that doesn't speak about what the thing is. That's the problem that I have here. That ultimately, the unborn child is a human being. But I don't think the question of relations matter. I think still, I'd like to return to the infanticide problem, that infants have a relation with the mother the same as a fetus might. If a woman gave birth to a child in a hotel room, didn't want the child anymore, it seems like they don't do anything morally wrong under your view to just kill the child in that hotel room.
Right. And just to say that for me, the associations and the consciousness are linked, that it's not one or the other, but it has specifically in the circumstance where there's no consciousness and no association, that in that case, it can be legally permissible to end a life for the sake of a conscious person's well-being and flourishing.
Now, here's the thing. We're going a bit long, but I like this conversation. So I'd like to just go maybe one or two more minutes and then we got to go. Normally when we pick criteria, we have reasons behind it. So for me, what's hard for me with your view is you have the association criteria, but you don't really have a reason for why that matters. When it comes to the consciousness criteria, I'm not sure what the reason there is, except when a being is conscious, they're able to understand the harm they undergo. I don't know why consciousness matters at this point.
Right. I think, and not to take up too much of the time, but just, I think these are sort of implicit views that atheists such as myself have, that we don't fully understand them ourselves, but something about
not all. Have you ever heard of secular pro-life?
I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it.
Well, I would recommend checking them out. They're a group, secular pro-life. They're atheists, agnostics, and they're against abortion. I think their motto is atheists are against abortion because this is the only life you have. which I think is a clever way to go about it. So I would recommend checking them out. And then you can always go to our website at catholic.com and also check out my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, as well. But I'm grateful that you called in and think we had a good chat.
And we got to go to a break, so I'll just say thank you for the call. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Trent. If you are a pro-choice person, this hour is for you. Why are you pro-choice? 888-31-TRUTH is the number.
This is Bishop Robert Barron, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roast. Perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Is prayer powerful? St. Alphonsus Liguori put it this way: he who prays will be saved. He who does not pray, well, you get the point. Prayer can bring us salvation. It's the means of putting us into communion with God, and God can do all things. The more our will lines up with the will of God, the more powerful our prayers, and the simpler they become ultimately, be it done to me, Lord, according to thy word. That's the prayer God will always answer.
Why are you pro-choice this hour on Catholic Answers Live? If you're a pro-choice person, we'd love to have a conversation with you about it. Hey, I don't want to stop saying this until the end of the week because it ends at the end of the week. You can still get that deal on Catholic Answers Magazine, $10 off the one-year subscription, $20 off the two-year subscription. If you go digital only, then you get $5 off that one. Just go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. CatholicAnswersMagazine.com, and you'll get all the information there. And if you get there, you'll probably sign up because you'll say to yourself, man, I can get one of the best Catholic magazines in the world for $20 off right now. And then you'll probably just do it. So head over there, CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Pro-choice callers only today. Next up is Damien in Austin, Texas, who is watching on YouTube. Damien, why are you pro-choice?
Hello, everybody. This is Damien here from Austin. As an atheist, I'll have to disagree with that previous caller there. Not all atheists agree with his position. In fact, I don't. It seems like what's going on in the conversation is that, for me, it comes down to a hierarchy of rights that we grant human beings. And it's my understanding that the bodily autonomy supersedes someone else's right to life. And so back to the previous caller's point on consciousness, that's why we don't harvest organs from the deceased, because their bodily autonomy supersedes someone else's need to stay alive, even though that person is already deceased. We're not going to harvest their organs to save someone if they need a kidney transplant, for example.
You mean against their will?
Yeah, they're dead. They don't have a will anymore. Against their wishes, both prior before they passed away, and even if they didn't leave their wishes behind, we still presuppose that their bodily autonomy is not to be violated, even if they never aired their wishes not to have their organs used for someone else. They have to volunteer that right to be removed.
So your position seems to be that just as we can't violate a person's bodily autonomy and take their organs without their consent to save a person's life, a pregnant woman can't be compelled to continue a pregnancy, even though the alternative will involve killing the fetus. Is that your position?
A little nuance on that position there. It seems like the pro-life side is abhorrent to the way of how the body of a fetus is being treated after it dies during the abortion process. Because an abortion is just, is removing the connection from the fetus to the woman, and the fetus will die of natural causes because it hasn't developed to be autonomous without being connected to her. Now, if you do a late stage abortion, say at the ninth month, that now just becomes a C-section where the fetus or the child gets to be born.
Well, not in the third. Well, hold on, Damien. Not in the third trimester. if your goal is to cause fetal demise, where at that point the fetus's heart is injected with poison and then they're delivered stillborn.
Okay, I misspoke. What I'm talking about, she never loses her right to end the pregnancy. So a late stage pregnancy where the woman chooses to end it, late stage is called a C-section. But an early stage of ending a pregnancy is called an abortion. And then people get upset of how the body of the fetus is being treated to be removed, because the woman never loses her right to end how someone else is using her body. Mm-hmm. And during an early stage pregnancy, when she chooses to end that use of her body because maybe she wasn't aware that someone is using her body,
okay,
and now she wants to end it because she never gave consent to begin with, that is now called an abortion. And the fetus will die of natural causes because it's no longer hooked up to her. So what the doctor does, it injects
Damien, I don't follow your description of this, that if by removing the child, let's say in the first trimester, you're saying the child dies of natural causes because they can't survive outside of the woman's body. But how is that any different from saying, if I put my 6-month-old outside during a blizzard, he dies of natural causes because he can't survive in that condition? How is that any different?
It's not any different in that case from what you're describing there. I agree. If you put someone in a situation where they die of natural causes, they will die of natural causes. And just in your situation, your child isn't being kept alive through the use of someone else's body without that other person volunteering their body to be used. That's the difference in the nuance of your example.
I could modify it a little bit here. What if we have a woman who the only food source she has to sustain the life of a child at that moment is her breast milk? Let's say she and her child are marooned somewhere, and the only thing she can use to keep this newborn baby alive is her breast milk. She has to breastfeed, use her body. Would she be justified in saying this newborn has no right to my breast milk and then just letting them die of natural causes because this child cannot feed themselves?
Okay, to that specific scenario, what I opened up with is that every human has the same hierarchy of rights as every other human does. That's why I don't disagree that a fetus isn't a human. Of course it's a human.
Does it have a right to life?
But it has a right to life just as much as everybody else does. But the hierarchy of rights is that bodily autonomy supersedes the right to life in the hierarchy of rights.
Why should I believe that?
For the example that I gave, let me get back to the point of the breast milk, then we'll get to this point.
Sure.
So with the point of the breast milk, that infant is a human being. Mm-hmm. It's just at an earlier stage of development as an adult would be.
Right.
So in that exact same scenario, would you, Trent, be allowed to force a woman to breastfeed you to keep you alive?
No, I don't think that I could force a woman to do that. That reminds me of the scene from, actually, that's the scene in John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath, when Rosa Sharon, she actually does keep an elderly man alive after her child dies from, mm-hmm, is stillborn. But I would say here,
she
volunteers to do that. The difference here is I would say that parents have natural obligations to their children that they don't have to strangers. So while I might not have an obligation,
correct,
to do something extraordinary to save someone else's life, do you think that parents have an obligation to feed and nurture their children?
Parents, you become a parent once you volunteer to be a parent to another individual.
What do you mean? Wait. Because I think there's about 8 million. There's about, hold on, Damien, I think there's like 8 million men who pay child support that would love for you to repeat this. You're saying a person only becomes a parent when they
volunteer.
Go ahead.
Talking about the hierarchy of rights, that the law hasn't addressed that problem yet, and I believe that it needs to. And I agree that to become, as far as I understand it, you have to make an agreement to be a parent to another individual. Otherwise, you can get them up for adoption. You can get rid of your parental rights. But to be a parent, that means, that's why you can adopt a child and become their parent. You can become a step parent to another child by acting out that role, but you have to assume the role of parent. You're not a parent just because you're genetically related to somebody.
If I impregnate someone and a child comes into existence, You're telling me I'm not the father of that child?
Genetically, you are. But if you're not playing the role of a father, you're just the person that created that individual.
So you're saying I have no duties to my children unless I decide to have those duties.
Correct.
How is that not selfish?
It is selfish.
Okay. Well,
I'm not saying that it wasn't.
Okay. Well, I think that's good to hear. Here's my next point, that I think this position you're arguing for is incoherent. So you believe the fetus has a right to life?
Yes.
What does
just
that
like every other human being?
Oh, right. So let's take an infant, for example. If an infant has a right to life, what does that mean?
An infant has a right to life. An infant is a human being. This is the point. Just like everybody else is genetically, they have the same hierarchy of rights as everybody else does. It's just, if you're going to grant a fetus right to life over bodily autonomy of someone else, you are now switching those two rights once they're born, because once a child is born, it no longer has a right to its life at the expenditure of someone else's bodily autonomy.
Now
let me give an example.
Okay, go ahead.
So let's say you're a parent and you put your child in the child seat and you run a red light and it caused an accident, and now that child is, for them to stay alive after the accident,
they need bone marrow.
The hospital doesn't have, they need something from the
you.
Parent.
Okay.
At that point, correct.
Yes.
So why is it that parent has to volunteer their bone marrow, whatever it is?
They don't have. They do not have to. Here's the difference. Two differences. One, my bone marrow is not made for another person's body. It's made for my body. The same with kidneys. The same with other things like that. However, things like breast milk, the uterus, they're naturally designed for another person to use. Second, if I choose to not give bone marrow to a dying person, I don't kill them. I just fail to save them from something else that kills them. In abortion, you're not failing to save a dying child. You're actively killing a healthy child who's living in the natural place they should be. And there's a clear difference.
Damien, thank you for the call. Why are you pro-choice? Our topic today. We've still got time to get you in if you want to dial now. 888-318-7884.
In his new audio presentation, The Very First Fathers, apologist Jimmy Akin takes you on a tour of the earliest Christian writings outside the New Testament, from the most famous figures and most notable works to those lesser known but no less important. This pivotal time in the development of the early church is revealed in fascinating detail. Jimmy shows how, even in the first century after the resurrection, it was necessary to defend and explain truths that are still under attack today, such as the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the perpetual virginity of Mary. The Very First Fathers is a compelling look at the dawn of the Christian age and edifying listening for anyone who wants to understand and defend the full truth of Catholicism. Order your copy of The Very First Fathers today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Looking for an on-fire Catholic speaker for your event? Catholic Answers speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
Tomorrow on More to Life, that escalated quickly.
Tired of arguments that go nowhere? We'll help you find solutions once and for all.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. If you're a pro-choice person, this hour is for you. Good friend, apologist, defender of life and of faith, Trent Horn is here to take your calls. 888-318-7884 is the number, and I'll go right to callers, but I got to say this. Last two callers, very intellectual, and I know you enjoy that, but I don't like those calls as much as I like. I'm just sharing this with you. I think you like those. I like the more emotional calls that are like, how can you do this to women, that kind of thing, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
It sounds very cold to talk about taking other people's lives without any emotion. It just it's like fingers on a chalkboard to me.
I agree with you, Cy, in that, I mean, I think in some of the callers earlier, I might've got a little amped up, maybe with our first caller.
You amped up is not, we'll all be okay, Trent. We're all gonna survive that.
There's a balance here. There's a balance between being completely hysterical and emotional, that I get emotional by this, and it should make us emotional. But the danger here is, if we become too emotional, people will just completely dismiss what we have to say and just say we're trying to bully and we're out of our minds, essentially, and we're just religious zealots.
Well, your perspective, I see that, but it's the caller who calls and just in a very cold, calculating way says, well, you can kill a human being at this point, or you can kill a human being at that point. I find that extremely hard to deal with.
Well, I do as well. So I think what's important here is that we should deal with it rationally and then not what's the word I'm looking for here? Muzzle. Like, what do they put on a horse? Not muzzle or mince our words. So to say things like, all right, so this is your position. It's all right to kill human beings under X, Y, and Z. That sounds very barbaric and exploitative and awful. Why would you think that? So I think that we can speak persuasively and calmly, but still talk about the moral gravity of the situation in terms that deserve it. So I think it's just finding a balance between doing that. I agree. This is not a purely academic issue. There are people's lives hanging in the balance. But at the same time, if we approach this with just emotions and hysterics, people won't listen to what we have to say.
I'm a little confused about which caller I'm allowed to go to right now. So I'm going to go to Bonnie in Washington. We're just going to see how that goes. Bonnie? Is this Bonnie? Bonnie?
Yes.
Oh, hey, Bonnie, you're on the air now.
Yeah.
This is Cy.
Oh, okay.
You're on the air. So, why are you pro-choice, Bonnie?
I'm saying I'm not necessarily pro-choice, but I'm not necessarily pro-abortion either. I am a Catholic woman who practices, and I have had an experience where a loved one was left with the dilemma of an unplanned pregnancy.
Yes.
And in that counseling, I did not go with the absolute position of pro-life. But what I'm calling about is the most empathetic thing that anybody ever said to me is, I grieved this young woman's dilemma of having an unplanned pregnancy and her choice to abort, and my counsel to allow her to make that decision because she would live with it. The most empathetic thing that anybody said to me was, and it was a woman, she said, there is no easy answer to an unplanned pregnancy.
Well, Bonnie, let me jump in here. I agree with you. If someone is pregnant and they did not intend to become pregnant, there is no easy answer. They either choose ending a child's life through abortion, they choose placing a child for adoption, or they choose raising this child. And so I think the question that we have to ask is, there's no easy answer, but is there a nonviolent one? And actually, there are two nonviolent options here. So I would say that it would be preferable for us to go with the nonviolent options instead of the violent option. How does that sound?
Hey, that isn't the reason I called. I know where I stand, but basically, it'll always be in prayerfulness to our Lord, our God, about such a painful issue, and requesting forgiveness. But the reason I called is I wanted to share how offensive it is to listen to men in church and men on the radio have these lengthy analytical discussions about abortion as related to a woman. And what I think we're missing in the Catholic Church, to the point where sometimes I've wanted to walk out of the church and never walk back in again, is that you, if you would have this discussion and keep the woman out of it, if you would have had this entire discussion today as man to man, and their action in procreating an unplanned pregnancy and the violence that that denotes. It's a very violent act.
Bonnie, are you talking about rape? Or are you talking about men having sex with women and not being responsible? I don't know what you're referring to.
Rape, that's right. Obvious.
Yes.
That's a whole other topic. No, I'm talking about every time a man has sex with a woman and doesn't think it to the end. In fact, they sometimes could care less. They're like you were talking, the discussion about animals and how animals behave. What I'm saying is until men and the men of the church start saying, we need to pray for all the men that are procreating children that are unplanned, and quit putting that onus on the lap of the woman. Once the woman's left with it, there's no easy answer.
Well, Bonnie, why can't we just say men and women should be responsible for the children that they conceive, and that men and women should love and respect one another, and both mothers and fathers should care for their children? I know many priests and bishops who pray for people to treat the sacrament of marriage with the holiness and deference it deserves. So I don't see the contradiction here. I think that we can say that both men and women should be responsible for the children that they procreate, and that if men are, for example, held responsible to pay child support, then women should be held responsible to care for these children who reside within their bodies until they're born, the natural roles that mothers and fathers have. And I think beside from that, I think it's fine for both men and women to discuss this moral issue, and of course, being sensitive to the people who are involved. So I'm grateful that you called, and definitely check out our website at Catholic.com for more.
Thank you very, very much, Bonnie. 888-318-7884 is our number. If you're a pro-choice person, this hour is for you. Thank you to all those who, I know there's a lot of pro-life people who would like to pick up the phone and dial, and I'm sure could contribute very many things that just Trent and I on our own are not able to contribute, but I appreciate your patience and you're allowing us to have these conversations with pro-choice people. It's very, very helpful. If you're a pro-choice person, I do believe we can still get you in before the top of the hour. We're going to take a break, so it's a good time for you to dial 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Why are you pro-choice?
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I've got a few things here and there that I've learned along the way. I'm always studying history, and I love studying history. So I try to bring in some of the historical perspective, especially at a time in our history when people don't know much history anymore.
Open Line with Father Mitch Pacwa, tonight, 10 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why are you pro-choice this hour? And I said that I thought we could get to everybody by the top of the hour. I hope that I was telling the truth about that. We'll do our very best. Right now, Trent Trax has got a brand new track out, A Catholic Guide to LGBTQ+. It's available at shop.catholic.com for only 99 cents through Saturday at midnight. That, of course, is a product of our own Trent Horn, who is our guest today. If you want to support Trent over at his podcast that you'll find at trenthornpodcast.com, then if you support Trent at the silver level, all those Trent tracks are free to you when they come out. How often are you making a new Trent track?
Well, we did one last month, so I'm hoping to do one maybe on average about one every 6 to 8 weeks or so. So it's a nice, intensive 70-minute MP3. It's almost like a little mini audiobook, actually, what I put together with this. So the first one was on how to win any abortion debate. This one is Catholic Guide to LGBTQ+, how to explain the church's teachings, how to answer those who say that we should have LGBT ministries in the church, or what about transgender, what about homosexuality in the Bible. All of that in this Trent Tracks, available for a limited time, half off at shop.catholic.com.
Let's go to Anne in St. Louis, listening on the iCatholic Radio app. Anne, why are you pro-choice?
I'm only pro-choice to the extent of the morning after pill. Mm. I took the morning after pill. Mm. The day following in the encounter, which was consensual, I immediately had morning sickness the next day, and I felt like the hand of God had stepped in to tell me I was pregnant. And I went to the student medical center. I was young, and I took the morning after pill, and it started my menstrual cycle.
Wait, you experienced nausea 24 hours after having intercourse?
The next day.
Okay. Well, yes. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I can't obviously say why you would feel that way. But normally morning sickness would not happen that early after conception. But regardless, you were worried about being pregnant and you got the morning after pill.
Well, my sister-in-law told me that she had the same thing happen to her. As soon as she had sex, the next day she had morning sickness.
Okay. So your position is you're against abortion, but you're okay with the morning after pill?
Well, yeah, because I thought if I hadn't gotten morning sickness, I could never have told my parents, and I would have ended up like these other poor girls, laying on a slab, having limbs pulled out of me.
You mean having an abortion?
Yes.
So, Anne, it sounds like to me you're saying abortion is wrong, but the morning after pill is okay because I needed it once in my life.
Well, it started my menstrual cycle right away, and I felt like it wasn't that bad. It wasn't like I had a baby taken out of me.
Well, it's... All right, and let me run through this a little bit. The morning after pill, also called emergency contraception, can work in one of three ways. It can prevent ovulation. It can prevent an egg from being released. It can prevent sperm and egg from uniting, or it may prevent the new embryo from implanting in the womb. We don't know how often or which of those mechanisms it primarily operates under. We actually don't know. With a ton of certainty. But emergency contraception is allowed in the Catholic Church, for example, if someone has been raped and they definitely have not ovulated yet to be able to use it there. But I just want to walk back a little bit here. So you said you describe yourself as Catholic?
Yes, I'm Catholic.
Okay. What are your thoughts about premarital sex and contraception in general?
I'm against it.
Okay.
I don't know why I did it. I don't know why I had premarital sex. Mm-hmm. It was wrong.
Have you brought this? Sure. Have you brought this to the Lord in confession?
No.
Would you like to?
I haven't confessed it to any priest.
Well, I feel like it's wrestling you, and it's wrestling inside of you. Because what's funny is a lot of people are nervous to confess it to a priest, and I know you're anonymous, of course, but you still confessed it to me and lots of people listening. I feel like you have a desire to want to get this out of you, essentially, to find some healing from this. So if you think it was wrong, do you think it might be a good idea to go to God in confession and say, Lord, please help me. Please take this away from me. Do you think that might be a good idea?
Yes, but I think that the church should encourage girls to do something stupid like I did to get the morning after pill.
Well, if I may, what does the church say about that, about the morning after pill? Could you clarify so that people know?
Right, and I said that very briefly, that the morning after pill acts contraceptively. It could also be abortifacient. It could prevent a child from implanting in the uterus. So the church teaches, of course, that married couples, for example, cannot use the morning after pill either as a contraceptive or an abortifacient. It could only be appropriate when, for example, a woman is a victim of rape and a Catholic healthcare provider has seen that she has not ovulated yet. And so this would prevent her from ovulating and stop the rapist's attack from continuing, essentially. Yeah. But once a child comes into existence, see, there's the thing for me, Anne, that we all do stupid things. Talk to my wife. I do a stupid thing 3 times a week. We all do stupid things.
I thought you were going to say, look who she married, but I apologize.
My wife has only done one stupid thing then in her life.
Yeah, look who she married.
But the thing is, the difference, what makes someone a saint is not that they don't fall down. It's that they refuse to stay down and they refuse to not ask God for help. They always ask God for help to get back up. I mean, my favorite example of doing a stupid thing would be King David. King David did 2 spectacularly stupid things. He slept with a woman that wasn't his wife. She got pregnant. And then to cover it up, he killed her husband. So instead of going to God saying, I'm sorry, he doubled down on his stupidity, and that tore apart his kingdom. And God loved David. David walked upright in the Lord. So even us who are holy, we can fall. So the question is, are we going to be proud and say, you know, I'm going to do things my way, or say, God, I royally messed up on this one. I am ashamed. Please forgive me. And I guarantee you, Anne, you go to confession and you're saying, you do sound sorry about this. There is an unsurpassed joy of feeling God's forgiveness and a peace to be released from this. And from that, we have an ability to follow the moral law without shame or guilt. So that's why I would strongly encourage you to go to confession with this and to feel free from the guilt that you're feeling. And I will pray for you, and I'll ask our listeners to pray for you as well. God loves you very much, Anne, and he would very much like to lift this weight from your shoulders, okay?
Anne, thank you. I hope that was helpful to you. We appreciate that call. It is just an hour and only a little bit of the hour left for those who are pro-choice to call. I think we're going to play a little telephone roulette now. We'll just see who we get. Hello, you are on the air. Your name, please. Hello? No?
Hello?
Oh, hello. You're on the air. Your first name, please, if you don't mind giving it. You can be anonymous, too, if you want.
This is James.
Okay, James. Why are you pro-choice?
I am pro-choice because of what I read in the scriptures. I do a little bit of studying in Greek and because of the situation.
What in the Bible makes you think that abortion should be legal? James, you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. What in the Bible makes you think abortion should be legal?
Well, the scriptures are speaking about babies in particular, even before they are born.
Right.
In the Greek text, the word babe is always used, no matter if it's a young child or an unborn child,
right, like,
such as with Jesus.
Oh, okay. So if it's the same, we should treat them the same, I would imagine. So James, do you think abortion should be legal or illegal?
No, it should be illegal.
Okay, great.
And it's kind of a shame for our country to even stoop as low as we are we've kind of lost our roots with how we're supposed to act as Christians.
I think you're pro-life, James.
Yeah.
I think we might have a conflict of terms here. You sound like pro-life to me. Are you pro-life, or are there some instances where you think abortion is okay?
No, 100% pro-life.
All right. Well, thank you, James, for calling in and for your support. And I think that we can know from Scripture as well as from Revelation. From Scripture, Revelation, the Church, and reason itself, that the unborn human beings and abortion is wrong. So you played telephone roulette, my friend, landed on a pro-lifer.
I know.
Shall we play again?
Pro-lifers have been very, very good about mostly just letting the pro-choice folks.
Yeah, so we've got 10 minutes left. We'd love to have another pro-choice person on the line if possible.
888-318-7884. 888-318-7884 is the number. What do you say to the person who said, because we did have a caller who dropped and who said this.
Sure.
And I'm not going to give the person's name because I don't know if they wanted to be anonymous or not. I'm pro-choice because I don't think we should value one life more than another, like those of immigrants. And this strikes me as, because we're having this immigrant, I don't know exactly where the caller was going to this, but we do have this immigrant kind of crisis that we're having in the United States. There was a kind of a striking picture of a father and a child killed.
They drowned.
Trying to cross the, I believe it was the Rio Grande.
Yes.
And so that picture is out there quite dramatically. And so I imagine, and I'll just have to imagine because the caller dropped, the argument is something along the lines of, well, we're just letting people die at the southern border, or maybe even our policies are leading to their deaths, and we don't care about those deaths, but we care about the deaths of preborn babies.
Right. These kinds of arguments are arguments for consistency. They're not arguments for abortion. What I would say is that if you are concerned about migrant deaths, you should be, but that would never justify directly and purposely ending the lives of an unborn human being. Though I will say that abortion is very different from what we're seeing at the border, for example, because to make it analogous would be, imagine we had a law that said that property owners along the border have the right to shoot any immigrant that walks through their property, the right to just shoot them, no questions asked, because it's their property.
Right.
Their property, their right, they've crossed over into it, they have a right to do what they want.
That's kind of a pro-choice argument.
Well, yeah, and most people would be naturally outraged by that a person's value and rights do not depend on their citizenship or their location. And so if a person believes that an undocumented worker has a right to life, even if they're not a citizen, even if they're not, quote unquote, in the right place, then surely don't the unborn have the same rights as well? So just because you may disagree, someone who's against abortion could be very inconsistent. They could be in favor of some other kind of injustice. Inconsistent people can still be right. That's an argument for consistency, not an argument for abortion.
Fair enough. We'll go to Jeremy. I think I'll go to Jeremy. I don't know where Jeremy is, but I'm going to go to Jeremy. And Jeremy's on line 6. Hello, Jeremy. Why are you pro-choice?
Hi, I'm calling from Auburn, New York. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Why are you pro-choice, Jeremy?
Okay, so personally, I am not, but my fiance is. She believes in contraception, so I guess my question is, how do I react to that? I mean, how do I live my Catholic faith once we are married? You know, how do I overcome that bridge with her?
You have a fiance?
Yes, we're going to be getting married in a few months.
A few months, okay. Is your fiance Catholic?
No, she's not. She's Protestant.
Okay. So do you have a dispensation then to get married? That'd be a mixed marriage then.
Yes, yeah, we will.
Okay. Here's the thing, though. To know that your fiance is entering into a Catholic marriage, does she know that Catholics are not allowed to use contraception?
The way I explained it is that once we're married, we need to be open to the possibility of life.
Yes.
So we've been having this discussion now for a few months, and so we haven't made too much progress. At least I haven't made too much progress.
Yeah. Well, then I would recommend here, Jeremy, she has to understand that it's not just a general openness to life, but you can say that when we get married on the altar, you and I are going to promise to be faithful to one another, and we renew our vows in every marital act. So every time we come together, husband and wife, we renew the vow of fidelity, for example. So it's not like we're generally faithful. We're faithful in every single act. Much the same way, it's not like we're generally open to life. We're open to life in every single act. Now, that doesn't mean that couples can't come together in naturally infertile times. You can do that with something like natural family planning. But she has to know that. She has to understand that that's what marriage in the Catholic Church entails. Otherwise, she may go into it with a misunderstanding. Your marriage may not have the proper understanding of what marriage is for. Stay on the line, Jeremy. I'd like our call screen to get your email. I can send you some resources on contraception to help explain this. I'll send you my book, Why We're Catholic, which covers a whole host of things that may be helpful to your fiancé. Stay on the line. I'll email you Why We're Catholic, and it'll be great. We'll say a little prayer for you guys.
Thanks a lot, Trent. That's hard work for 2 hours.
Hard but necessary. I'm happy to dialogue and proclaim the gospel of life, and I hope our listeners will do the same.
And in general, I thought the callers were polite and willing to have a conversation.
I think we had many good discussions, and I hope some seeds are planted in those who are listening.
Not always willing to answer a direct question, but
well, the conversation goes on.
Hey, 2 hours of open forum. Try to beat this. Jimmy Akin, Father John Trujillo. Come on. That's 2 great hours of radio, and that's what you're getting on Catholic Answers Live. Tomorrow, we'll see you then, God willing.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.